4 to 5 month period, it was just Hamburger Helper, Miller Lite. Hamburger Helper, Miller Lite. That's all we could afford. We couldn't afford nothing else. Like, that's what it was.
It would have been a lot cheaper to drink a handle rather than a rack of Miller Lite. That's all I'm saying.
So that's what I did for about 4 or 5 months. And I coached football, and that was a retransformation because I went back to what I knew, but it sucked because I'm like, man, like, this is my life. Like, I'm literally on, what's it called? Living Social. And I'm perusing Living Social, finding phone numbers of people to call and say, hey, you want to get some sessions on the side? Like, so basically I scammed Living Social. And
see, this is the damn story.
I scammed.
You want to know how to have an incredible speech? This is the speech.
Well, I do talk about everything, like, as far as alcoholism, depression, pain medication, you know, not wanting to get out of bed, you know, saying, my God, why me? Like, why did you choose me? I paid my taxes. I took care. So I was a community guy in the NFL. I had a business. I hired ex-cons. I hired people who society had given up on. I was doing things in the community. I was a minority business. I was trying to get back. Why the hell did you basically just take from me everything, my house gone, both my trucks repossessed in the same week, gone. Then to top that, coaching football wasn't enough. So what did I do? I became a part-time janitor in downtown Raleigh, making $8.25 an hour, cleaning baseboards, vacuuming, pledging tables, scrubbing them, taking trash out, pouring in the dump. You talk about degradation. You talk about feeling like you haven't made anything of yourself. You talk about somebody that's which is hardworking, but hardworking with not a plan. I was just trying to basically scrape to stay alive. That's what I was like.
You clawed your way back.
Yes, absolutely. I remember when both cars got repossessed and we had to go get a car and we went to get this piece of crap Altima that I had to pay like 30% interest because our credit was so shot, but we could get nothing else. And I remember my wife had a job at the learning center, like a daycare. She had to wear this blue, bright blue shirt with an elephant emblem on her shirt. And I would pick her up, like I would be coaching football, I'd be on the phone calling people, training, calling, and I would drop her off at work, I would go pick her back up.
You know what? You can't see it when it's happening, but I so believe that if you're somebody that's going to go out in the world and do big things, there is a big breakdown that you have to go through, that life tests you. You don't get to go out and inspire other people, in my opinion, unless you have stood the test. And boy, oh boy, did you stand the test.
Oh, I literally remember sitting in our house, just thinking to myself, what am I living for? Why? If it wasn't for my wife and my stepdaughter, I mean, you can literally say, wow. Like, when you lose millions of dollars in 90 days, well, let me say, when you spend it and you expect to get it paid back because you're doing
business.
I don't
even think that was the big thing. I actually don't. I think the big thing was probably the moment that you were literally trolling Living Social, begging for high school coaching side jobs and working as a janitor.
That was it. Now, the life defining moment, I was taking out the trash at 3 o'clock in the morning. Someone spoiled milk and their trash got on my bare skin when I was taking out the trash because my glove had broke and it got right on my skin. And I was taking it out, and I went after I dumped it, went and sat down on the curb, had it in my hands, and said, is this going to be your life? Is this what you're destined for? To sit here on the curb. This is in 2013. This is in the summer. Are you destined to spend the rest of your life coaching football, begging people for 3 sessions for $129? Are you going to always pay $8.25 an hour? Or are you going to actually get off your butt and go out there and try to help other people? Try to help. And really, I started this, Mel, to help other athletes not go through bankruptcy. 78% of us have filed bankruptcy 2 years after being retired.
That's insane.
78%. And I became a statistic, not because I was blowing money on cars, I invested in the wrong thing. And when you put everything into one thing, work for the NFL now, work with the player engagement department. I've seen guys, Mel, who lost money in the restaurant business. Guys that have lost money trying to become like a, let's try to start a franchise that goes under. They're in the wrong place, wrong location, wrong timing. I could just go down the list. Guys that now just don't want to get out of bed.
So let me ask you a question. What I want to know is, what was your secret to making the turn? Because I think that there's a ton of people who hit a rock bottom moment, that in that moment, your head is in your hand and you're sitting on the curb and you're thinking, how could this be my life? How could I have gone from the NF fucking L to a multi-million dollar company, to losing it all, to sitting here on a curb just a couple years later as a janitor?
Mm-hmm.
How did you go from that moment of despair to actually saying the answer is helping somebody else, or the answer is telling my story?
So that whole time I was scrawling, crashing. Then I was like, wait a second. So when the trash got on my skin, I said, oh my God, like this can't be it. So I sat down. I was like, okay, all right, what are you going to do? And then I just, it's like some voices came to my, it's like my father's voice said, Marcus, this is where you are going to have to go back to what I taught you. Leadership skills are the only thing that can get you out of this. Because if you keep blaming other people, you are going to always be sitting right here on your ass, always getting second best, third best, whatever the hell you want to call it. The worst, the bottom of the barrel. You will always get what life throws you, not go out and get what you want.
Well, you know, what's so interesting is I'm going to show you that you're at a very similar moment in your business now. That all quantum leaps that happen are caused by getting out of the weeds and looking ahead. And that when you're in the zone of hustle, 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 get by, claw your way out, blame, you cannot see where you're going.
Right.
And we're going to be thinking bigger, because that's the answer to any leap that you manufacture. You've already done it in your life.
Right.
And now it's time to do it again. Let's go back to that moment where you're sitting on the curb.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first thing that you did? Because leadership skills sounds like such a big concept.
Well, okay.
What does that mean?
All right, so what was the first thing I did? You want the truth?
Yeah.
I cried.
Okay.
I cried. I was like, damn. Like, I just cried. Then after getting over that, I went home. I sat at my little table, my little whatever table in my office. It was really more like my little sit room. And I wrote out a five-step action plan. Number one, I'm going to be a speaker. Number two.
Why a speaker?
Because when I was in the NFL, did a lot of speaking for them. I had a comfort in it, and I was very good at talking, and I also knew I was a people person.
Gotcha. Okay, so you went right back to what am I good at? What am I energized by speaking?
Correct.
Cool. I'm going to be a speaker.
Right.
So you're a janitor, but you have the guts to write on a piece of paper, I'm going to be a speaker.
Correct. And okay. You know what? That was number one. Number two is I had to identify my verticals. I didn't have the other two at the time, but I knew leadership was going to be my first one, so I focused on that. Number three, who am I trying to help? Wanted to help athletes, because that's what I was, that's what I knew, and I said, okay, these people can relate to me. Number four, who was in my inner circle? I wrote down names of people of kids I was training for football. Then number five, I just said, every single day, I'm going to tell 1 to 3 people what I'm trying to do. Every single day. Either they can laugh at me, mock me, which most did.
They mocked you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, Marcus, why are you doing this? Like, you know how hard it's become a speaker? Marcus, like, you should be a football coach.
You did exactly what you should do, which is you trust that first impulse. You start to get clarity by writing things down, and then you practice the clarity by speaking it out loud, and then you get the avalanche of people that say, oh, no.
No, you're making a mistake.
Yes.
That's
a test.
What are you thinking?
See, life is full of tests.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a test to see if you're actually serious.
Yep.
Because all you get when you tell people what you're up to is them reflecting back exactly what they think you should do.
Right.
And you were... Like, there's so many signs in this that it's going to happen.
It's funny.
Because you didn't listen. You didn't listen when people said you should be a football coach, because that makes perfect sense.
Sure does. It's easy.
Yes.
It's comfortable.
It's comfortable. It's comfortable because I can now put you in a box, mm-hmm. and that's how I know you, and that's what you should do, and that feels like the easiest thing to do. And so, first of all, I got to applaud you for the fact that you didn't listen. Mm-hmm. And second, I, you know, also have to applaud you for the fact that you kept telling people.
Yeah.
You kept telling people.
Absolutely.
So, tell me, so how long have you been in the speaking business?
About 5 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what is the ceiling that you've hit? Define the ceiling that you've hit.
The ceiling that I've hit is I've been doing some jobs, but it's not consistent where I'm really having I'm having the struggle going up to that next level where you're getting paid the larger amounts more consistently.
So in other words, the ceiling that you've hit is that you are at a point where you know what you're doing, mm-hmm. you know what you want to be doing, mm-hmm. but you're not doing enough of it.
Correct.
So you need more sales.
Correct.
And you need more exposure.
Correct.
Okay. So when you hit a ceiling, mm-hmm. whether it's in business or with a relationship or in your career, in order to cause this leap to the next level, one of my favorite things to do is time travel.
Okay.
And the reason why I love time traveling is because it gets me out of the weeds, and I think you're in the weeds.
Okay.
And that what I want you to do is I want you to travel forward. Mm-hmm. And let's go 2 years out.
Okay.
And I want you to describe exactly what does your business look like? How many speeches are you doing? Mm-hmm. We need to quantify it. So go out 2 years and tell me where you want to get to. This is a critical piece to causing the growth.
So I would say is in 2 years, I like to be doing 5 or 6 a month, you know, with corporations all across the world.
You want to do about 60 speeches a year.
Give or take, yes.
So when you have benchmarks mm-hmm. through time traveling, mm-hmm. then it becomes much easier to back yourself up and figure out what do you need to be doing now? Because you're still in the mode of hustle, 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 hustle.
Right.
And the things that you do when you're hustling, they dig you out of a hole. Mm-hmm. But they're not strategic.
Correct.
And in order to cause that leap, you're going to have to cause a shift in your behavior. You're going to have to cause a shift in the habits that you have. You're going to have to cause a shift in your focus. And that shift that you're going to cause right now in this moment is anchored to 2 years out. What I want you to do is I want you to find 3 or 4 other people that have consistent bookings that are basically doing what you want to do.
Right.
And then I want you to take a look and see what are the things that they're doing.
Okay.
And then whatever habits they have that you don't have,
add them.
You need to pivot right now. Mm-hmm. You need to act right now in this moment consistently with the person that's already got 60 engagements. Mm-hmm. And what you're going to find is those people are doing certain things on social media. They have certain types of positioning. They have certain habits. They have certain events that they go to. They have certain relationships. You're going to observe all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
And then you're going to start to do it.
Got it.
And the reason why that works is because what we want to do is get you out of the pattern of doing what you're doing now because it's only giving you the results that you have. In order to reach the next level, particularly when you feel stuck, you have got to time travel. You have to identify some goalposts and some people that are doing kind of what you want to do, not people that have been doing it for 35 years.
Right.
That will just deflate you.
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. You want to pick somebody that's within reach, that you admire, that's the next step.
Okay.
And then look at what they're doing. There are things that you want to emulate.
Right.
Got it?
Makes sense.
Okay. The other thing, and this is an observation, I suspect that there is a subconscious imposter syndrome thing that is at play here. And let me explain why I suspect that. When I was first getting into the speaking business, my insecurity started to creep in because like you, I started out and I wasn't paid at all for the first couple of years. And then I realized, wow, people get paid to do this.
Right.
And then I started getting paid a small amount, and I became very insecure and shy about making the jump to go to the next level, to double my fee, to be a little bit bigger. And so in that time period, when I started to feel self-conscious, I had hit a ceiling, just like you've hit a ceiling. My insecurities were right there because I hit the ceiling. The imposter syndrome was right there because I hit the ceiling. I started to lean too much on credentials. I started to talk about the fact that I was with CNN, which has nothing to do with speaking. I started to talk about, you know, the TED Talk or the Dartmouth, the Ivy League credential, which has nothing to do with speaking. Mm-hmm. And I led with that for a long time because I thought I had to be smarter than the audience. I thought I had to be a leader. I thought I had to be this person with all these fancy pants credentials. And that's what justified me being on the stage. It wasn't until, and I didn't realize this until probably 2 years ago.
Wow.
It wasn't until I realized, holy shit, there's 100,000 people that call themselves leadership experts. There's only one Mel Robbins. Nobody can tell my story but me. And when I did the exact same exercise that I'm telling you to do, which is time travel. Time travel 2 years ahead. Look out. See who you're jealous of. See who you admire. See whose business, man, I would really love to have a business like that. See what the hell they're doing. And then have an honest conversation with yourself about what that looks like. I realized something very specific. At the range that I wanted to speak at, there are a couple kinds of speakers. There are celebrities, that legit celebrities. That's one kind of speaker. You've got the people that are intellectual firebrands, who are researchers, that are super cerebral. And then you have people that are personalities. That's me. Nobody can tell my story. I'm not smarter than anybody in the audience. I'm not an expert in leadership. I'm not an expert in anything, actually. I'm a motivational speaker that uses my story to entertain, to educate, to inspire people on subjects around resiliency, around change. And I think part of the reason why you're stuck is because you are so focused on credentials and leadership that you're forgetting your number one asset, and that's you.
Me.
You know, that Marcus's story is a story that I want everybody in my organization to hear. Not that Marcus is the leadership expert that I'm going to hire from Howard and the NFL and blah, 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 blah.
I love the voice change, but that's awesome. But yeah.
Right?
No, that's...
But that your story...
That's spot on.
...is powerful enough. And you don't make the leap until you have a spoiled milk moment. Like you had sitting on that curb where you said, you know what? Something I'm doing isn't working. And you went home and you time traveled and said, I am going to go back to something that inspires me, which is being a speaker. And what I'm here to tell you is leadership experts, innovation experts, they are a dime a dozen. Mm-hmm. Being a personality that inspires people, that takes care of people, those are one in a million. And when you embrace what's unique to you and you marry it with the habits of people that are 2 years ahead of you, you win every single time. What are you getting out of that?
I'm getting that my approach has been all wrong.
100%. When you're in the beginning, you got to hustle. You got to do anything you can possibly do to get somebody to pay you a dollar to do the thing you want to do.
And by the way, for 2.5 years, I didn't get one paid job.
Yeah,
so,
me either.
So I get
me either.
Yeah.
But see, that's what I mean about earning the ability to do something that makes a difference. You got to be willing to do it for free before somebody is going to actually pay you.
Sure.
Then once people start paying you, you got to take all those clients and you got to use them for credibility. That's marketing.
Right.
That's not what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I am talking about the internal anchoring that you use to propel yourself forward. you're at a point where the marketing has worked. You're in the game. Mm-hmm. The reason why you've hit the ceiling is now it's time for you to become yourself and fully own it. And that takes a lot of courage.
Wow. I was talking to someone and said, Marcus, you know how many people would love to hear, event players would love to hear from a, and he said the same thing you did, an NFL athlete to a multi-million dollar business owner to a janitor. They said you can't hear that.
For the rest of your life, be on the hunt for where you're trying to be someone you're not. Be on the hunt for where insecurity is taking you out of your lane. Insecurity is always there, and it will kill your dreams, it will kill your momentum, and so you've got to be on the lookout for it and squash it wherever you see it. Never lose the special sauce that is the fact that there's only one you, and you have a unique perspective and a unique spin on things.
There's so many mental notes I've taken today. It's just unreal. It's unreal.
Awesome.
I'm feeling positively overwhelmed with great information. If you're stuck in anything in life, look forward. And then pull yourself out of the weeds, the rut, the clutter, the, you know, the craziness, and be a forward thinker. To start forward thinking. And that's going to help put you to a place where you want to be.
Don't you want to go see him speak? I know I do. By the way, he not only was filled with great information, but I also heard from him less than a week after we had that conversation. He took everything we talked about to heart. He changed his sales strategy. He's now pitching the Marcus Ogden story rather than trying to position himself as a business leadership expert. And guess what? He just landed the biggest speaking engagement of his life. Now, there are three main things I want you to take away from this coaching session. Number one, be on the hunt for wherever you are not owning your unique story. Because of insecurity, Marcus was positioning himself as a leadership expert, and he was missing the point. His real power was in telling his story. You see, if you rely too heavily on credentials like Marcus did, like I used to do, it might be because of insecurity. There's a time and place for credentials, and it's when you're starting out. But over time, your power is never in your credentials. It's in you, your story, your instincts, and the unique things that you bring to the table. So wherever you're shying away from who you really are, I hope this coaching session gives you the kick in the ass that you need in order to embrace yourself fully. Now, the second takeaway I want to highlight is the power of time travel. How do you engineer a quantum leap or take anything in your life to the next level? Simple. I want you to travel forward 2 years. Envision where you want to be. And then list out all of the thinking and behavior patterns that you've changed. Then we're going to bring that all back to the present day. And I want you to start shifting your thinking and behavior now to align with the patterns from the future you. Now, what if you have no idea what direction you're going to head in? Well, there was a little gem Marcus shared that I want to highlight and make sure that you picked up on, because I sure picked up on it. Remember when he talked about that life-defining moment? He was sitting on the curb, working as a janitor. He had spoiled milk on his hand, and he was so down and out, thinking, this just can't be my life. Do you remember how he identified the new direction to head in? This is the final takeaway. He asked himself a question, and you need to steal it. He said, what in my life came easy or energized me? That's where you start if you don't know what direction to head in. For Marcus, the thing that came easy, the thing that energized him, was when he was speaking in the community when he was in the NFL. That was the answer. Go back to the thing that came easily and energized him. And that's how he began his quantum leap. And guess what? That's how you can begin yours if you don't know how. This is a real tough love coaching session with a woman named Jessie who's been struggling to lose weight for decades. Now, I need to give you a trigger warning because, boy, is this a tough love conversation. The way I talk to this person, it's intentional and it's aggressive, but I do it for a reason.
My name is Jessie. I am 33 and I am from Syracuse, New York. I'm just not comfortable in my skin. On a physical level, it's difficult to fit into certain chairs, to do normal everyday, activities with my kids. I'm always the one that stands out in the crowd, typically as the bigger girl in the room. And, I'm ready to not be dealing with the extra weight that potentially could take my life in the end.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you're probably going to hate me as you listen to this. Just promise me you will listen all the way to the end, because the issue that she walked in asking for help with isn't the one she needed help with.
I was labeled as an emotional eater, as an overeater. I had like an eating disorder, and I'm not saying I don't, but I don't.
Why do you get mad when people tell, when people say what's true about you?
Cause I want to decide what's true about me. I don't want other people telling me, who I am.
You're going to hate talking to me then.
Well, maybe that's why I'm here. Cause I need, you know, I said I needed a push.
And let me tell you. She got one.
Oh, shit.
You're listening to live coaching sessions with real people.
Hi, Mel. I'm Aisha Hamid from Pakistan.
Love you, Mel.
Hi, Mel. I want to be coached by you.
Pick me, Mel.
Hi, Mel. My name is Louise. I'm from Brazil.
54321. Come on, Mel Robbins. Please pick me.
Facing real problems.
Anxiety of what other people think.
Self-acceptance is my biggest thing.
Procrastination is causing me to just build a wall.
The fear of losing weight.
That shit's deep as fuck.
And experiencing real change.
That's powerful.
That was the Real Talk Express.
Oh, shit.
Now I really know what to do, and I feel empowered.
That is nuts, Mel. You blew my shit away.
This is Kick Ass with Mel Robbins.
Hi!
How are you?
Good!
Welcome to Boston.
Thank you.
Tell me why you're here. Why do you want to talk to me?
Okay, I need to get over the self-sabotage of my weight loss.
Okay.
So that's the main reason.
Okay. Well, let's talk about your weight. How much do you weigh?
All right, I am 293, maybe?
Is this the heaviest you've ever been?
Absolutely.
Have you always been heavy?
I was healthy weight up until my first, second grade. And then I had some abuse happen. And since then, I have always been overweight or obese.
And what happened in second or third grade?
I was sexually abused by a teenage boy in the neighborhood.
What happened?
I was at a sleepover.
Uh-huh.
And the girl that I was friends with, her older brother was babysitting us.
Mm-hmm.
He brought me into his room and he did some sexual acts to me, and his friend also to his sister.
Did you and the friend ever talk about
it? Nope. After that, she started to bully me and, I started to gain weight, so our friendship was over at that point, and,
What did she do to bully you?
Oh, we were on the same softball team, and it was just, she was just snotty towards me on the bus, you know, she would make comments about my weight.
This is in first and second grade.
This is very young, so like the details are foggy, but that's the truth, and it's really only been until recently that I've started talking about it.
And had you always remembered it, or had you suppressed it and then it came back later?
I suppressed it and it came back later.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You know, you got more choked up when you talked about the bullying than you did when you talked about the molestation and sexual abuse. Why?
I think I'm more disconnected with the abuse. The bullying has been, that was something that went on for years. So that was more of a constant, and when I got older and older. And it wasn't until middle school when I started to sing. So I had like a positive thing I was known for that I was able to build my confidence.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So, when did you remember the sexual abuse?
9 months ago.
That's it? How old are you?
33.
Well, it was 27 when I remembered mine. I am a survivor as well. It was an incident at fourth grade.
Oh, okay.
That's right about the same time there. And how did you remember it? What happened?
Oh, shit. Really?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Why? What? This is a dramatic story?
Well, okay. I was being intimate with my husband, and I had a flashback while we were being intimate.
Wow.
Yeah, it sucked. But as I learned, that's normal.
Yeah.
Like, that's a way that trauma can come back. And my husband's a safe place, and he was awesome. He's a great man. But yeah, so I had this flashback. I was going through EMDR therapy.
Oh, so you're going through therapy for your weight?
I was
and
going.
And that stirred up a bunch of stuff that had
yes.
you remember being sexually abused while
yes.
making love to your husband.
Yes.
You can laugh.
All right, we'll laugh because I don't know how else to handle it right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, our issues can be heavy, or you can actually try to bring some levity to serious issues so that you get in touch with your humanity.
Yeah, yeah.
You're still here. You're still breathing. You're still on the right side of the soil. Like, so, and you survived.
I did.
We don't, the incident itself has enough heaviness to it. That if you can find the humor in life, it can be helpful.
Absolutely.
Okay. So you discover it and then you go back into therapy and what do you learn?
I learned that, this is essentially when I learned that this is the reason I'm blocked with my weight loss and also with my businesses that I, you know, my entrepreneur businesses, that I sabotage myself. A fear of really being seen.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's being acknowledged in my business, like it's what I want, it's what I know I can get, but then it happens and then I retreat and I sabotage all the hard work I've done. So same thing with the weight loss. Like, so that's what I learned after I had the flashback.
And okay. And so now that you have this insight, which makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Good. I'm glad.
Yeah. It makes a lot of
well,
sense.
Well, that's the fear is
I'm
you talk
fat
about
because,
it.
Because, you know, like the reason why I'm fat is because I don't want anybody to touch me.
Yeah. And people go, oh, but you're just lazy. Like you don't
are
follow.
You?
No, I'm so fucking hard worker.
Why are you fat?
Because I sabotage myself because I'm afraid of people.
Yeah. But what does that mean?
Because I eat. I will eat stuff from my childhood. Like those are my favorite foods to go to.
Why did you get mad at me when I said you're lazy?
Because people have said that to me.
What if it's true? There's a difference between being busy, which you are, and being lazy, which means you actively avoid doing the hard stuff.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Do you see the difference?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that part of the issue is being busy. And you strike me as somebody who, it's sort of like this energy that if you just keep moving, no one can catch you.
Yep.
I do understand what you're saying about the weight and how it can become a protection and it can become a sense of safety and identity. And it also allows you to not be seen, which makes you feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there's a deeper level to this that you haven't uncovered about what you're actively doing that will help give you the self-control and the power that you need that you can't find.
Okay.
Have you ever had a period in your life where you did lose weight?
Yes.
What happened?
I was like 23, I think it was.
Okay.
And it was the only time I was a healthy weight.
And how much do you weigh?
I was 150.
Okay.
Which is pretty.
How tall are you?
Like 5'7", 5'8".
Yeah, it's a great weight.
Yeah, I'd like to be back there.
Okay. You can get back there.
I know.
Do you believe that?
I do. I know it's going to be hard. And I don't necessarily think what's going to be hard is the physical work.
What's going to be hard?
Letting go of the fear.
What are you afraid of?
People seeing me.
What does that even mean? I see, I don't buy that. I don't think that's true. I think you're dying to be seen.
Mm.
You're a singer, for crying out loud.
It's true. Right.
I think there's something else going on entirely. The way in which you're describing this stuff,
okay,
is too convenient. And seeing the things that you've seen, it's not making a difference. And that tells me that we haven't discovered the truth yet.
Okay.
Not necessarily okay. about what happened with the trauma, but actually what you did in response to it and the patterns that you started to develop and the strategies that you started to use. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yep. I was labeled as an emotional eater, as an overeater. I had like an eating disorder, and I'm not saying I don't, but I don't.
Why do you get mad when people tell, when people say that what's true about you?
Cause I want to decide what's true about me. I don't want other people telling me, who I am.
You're going to hate talking to me though.
Well, maybe that's why I'm here. Cause I need, you know, I said I needed a push. I need a big push. And so.
Okay.
There has been this defense mechanism. It's like, I don't need anybody. I can do it on my own. And my poor husband has been has gotten the brunt of that a lot. So,
what do you think you're angry about? Like, so, what's interesting is you're lovely and funny and you got a great personality. And I would imagine that when you walk into the room, your energy and your personality is what's in the room.
Yeah.
But underneath all of that, there's somebody who's very angry.
Yeah, I could see that. That's why I don't really have a lot of deep friendships, probably, for this reason.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it gets to that point and I say, fuck you, and I leave, or I move, or I go to a different church, or I go to a different job, and
mm-hmm.
it gets too close.
Yeah, catch me if you can.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how my husband
You're constantly testing people.
You. Yeah.
To see if they're gonna stick around.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
How's it working?
Not great. Yeah. And I guess I'm afraid that my husband's gonna go. You know, I'm gonna push him.
Have you?
I haven't pushed him far enough yet, but I know he has said, he's not happy. He wants more of an intimate relationship. And I just like close it off. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. We're fine. You know?
The cool thing is that you know a lot. You know what you reach for when you get emotional.
Yeah.
You know that the sexual abuse makes you want to hide.
Yeah.
The thing that we haven't figured out is the real pattern.
Okay.
I think it has to do with anger.
Okay.
When I think about what we've been talking about so far, the piece that really jumps out at me though is the theme of friends, the theme of bullying, and it's striking to me that that upsets you more than the sexual abuse that you remembered, that this lack of connection in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk more about that.
Okay.
So why do you think you don't have any friends?
Because I feel like if I am really honest with them, then they won't want to be friends with me.
What does that mean?
Like, they'll see my ugliness, and then they'll run away.
What's your ugliness?
What is my ugliness? All right, let's go. Let's see. I'm selfish.
Okay.
I'm definitely selfish. I want to be the center of attention. I want to be the most, the best in the room. I'm trying to think of, like, what would people say right now?
I love this. I love it because you're actually, this is the first time you're being honest.
Okay.
I think the worst thing that actually happened to you is when a therapist told you that you're fat because of sexual abuse.
Hmm.
I think it's the opposite. I don't think that you want to hide at all. I think you're pissed off when you're not the center of attention.
Hmm.
You just admitted it.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be just like, I used to be the world's biggest narcissist. It's why I have very few friends from high school, very few friends from college, very few friends from my 20s and 30s. And it wasn't until I realized, holy shit, I wouldn't want to be my friend either. Because I don't like to share the attention. I don't like it when other people are doing better than me. I'm catty.
Mm.
I'm jealous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gossipy. And it's all because it's got to be about me. And I think the reason why you haven't lost weight has nothing to do with sexual abuse. You've been heavy your whole life.
Yeah.
You didn't even remember this.
Right.
Very Freudian of a therapist mm-hmm. to tell you, oh, conveniently, now we have the answer. No, we don't. You like your weight.
Yes.
Because.
That's true.
Oh, tell
that's
me
true.
More.
I do like my weight.
Why do you like being fat? And I'm going to use that word.
That's okay. It is fat.
Yeah. Why do you like it? Why do you like being the size you are?
Oh, maybe it's because I'm, oh shit. Because I'm the fattest person in the room.
Oh, uh-huh.
So that makes me special somehow.
Uh-huh.
Oh, this is very interesting. It almost gives me a reason to be angry at people. Like, I feel like people are judging me, but they're maybe not even saying anything, but they look at me. And then I'm like, oh, they think I'm fat. I hate them. You know, and I'm like, I don't even know this person. I'm trying to think of an example. Like, let's say I'm on the airplane,
mm-hmm.
sitting next to this businessman,
mm-hmm.
and when you were a fat person, like, oh my God. I did have anxiety sitting, like, who am I going to sit next to?
Why?
Because my chub goes over into their seat.
You love that, though. Admit it.
Oh, because they see that I'm there. Like, they have to know I'm here.
You take up space, man. If you lost all that weight and you were just a 150-pound pastor's wife, look, you're even disgusted by that idea. And you have the audacity to come in here and tell me, I want to lose weight.
Oh, my God.
I'm sad, Mel. I want to lose weight. No, you don't. No, you don't.
Yeah, you're right. I don't, because I know how to do it.
What is the power that you get from being the weight that you are? Tell me all the things that are good about it.
Oh.
Tell me the ways in which you get to use your weight to boss your husband around.
Oh, boy. Gosh. How do I use my weight to boss my husband?
Or to dominate him.
There is a sense of, like, you need to pity me because I am fat.
Bingo.
And I'm fat, so I need to take a nap.
Yep. And what else?
And you need to do the dishes.
Yep.
And you need to do the laundry. And can you just take one of these effing kids for I can take a break? Because I'm fat? What? What? Does that? I mean, what? Are you kidding me? This is unexpected.
It always is. You haven't gotten down to the core root. And the root is not sexual abuse. The core is narcissism. And it's a desperate desire to dominate the hell out of any situation. And yeah, maybe you got some rage in you because you got bullied like everybody got bullied, but it spiraled out of control. And when you started to get fat, you got people's attention. Mm-hmm. Was your mother worried about your weight?
Yes, but it was very like, damn, it was very tiptoe. Everyone has to tiptoe around me.
Oh, because you're special.
I'm special and I should say I was. I'm good at tantrums. They've gotten less and less over the years because I've have tools to better to deal with my anger. But I was known as like the door slammer. So if you were gonna take my cookies away, like, no one wants to do that. So there was a lot of like walking around eggshells around me.
So let's go back to your husband. So do you deny him sex because you don't want to get naked?
You know, I'm actually okay being naked. I know.
Great.
I am.
Well, you know why? Because you're proud of how you look.
Oh, fuck.
Doesn't it suck when you see the truth?
Oh, my God. Some people say, I hate being fat. I'm so fat. And I'm like, no, I am body positive. Like, it's okay to be big, you know.
I want to be honest with you about something.
Okay.
I don't care what you weigh. I am all for body positive and people feeling amazing in their bodies. What you have to come to terms with is that you are using your weight to punish other people, to dominate other people, and to be a big fucking whiny tantrum throwing adult.
I can't believe it. I mean, it's true. Like, I'm shocked right now. I really am, but it's true.
Are you actually shocked? Meaning, I find it surprising that a therapist would not have, that somebody wouldn't have pointed this out, but maybe they haven't.
My husband's been trying to tell me. You think that? I wasn't listening to him. Like, he would, he's been trying to tell me this. I mean, he's been living with me.
But you're, if you're a narcissist, you don't hear it. Like, that's the thing you don't understand. You are a power-hungry narcissist who's using her weight to control everything.
Shit, you're right. Like, that's true. That is true.
So,
wow.
Here's the question. Do you want to lose weight or do you want to be fat and not a narcissist? you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, because like, when I was skinny, I was still a narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
I was still a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I like to call myself that, but I acted like it at times.
Mm-hmm.
So do I want to be...
Who do you want to be? Like, what do you want? Like, so the first 33 years of your life was you were a tantrum-throwing fat narcissist.
I don't want to be that anymore. I don't want to be that anymore. I don't want to be a mean person.
Well, you're going to get a divorce. Narcissists don't stay married very long.
I believe it. I
don't think we've completed the list. What are you doing? What do you do with your husband to dominate him?
Criticize.
Yeah. When he tries to help, what do?
Shut up, I don't need your help, and I run away, kind of thing.
What do you do at your husband's congregation to be noticed? Because I bet it just burns you up that he's the one that gets all the attention. Just hate that they love him so much. It's true. Why does that upset you?
Because that's true. It's... I want to help people, but then, this has been a huge argument in our marriage. My resentment for not being seen or appreciated or acknowledged.
It bothers you.
Yeah.
That he's the one up front of that church.
Yeah. Because I can do it better. Hello. I went to school like he did. We went to Bible school together. Like, I can preach like you can. My God, this sounds so bad.
It's the truth.
Yeah, it's true. And this is nothing new to him. So, you know what's...
say that. Say it. It's disgusting. Let's hear it.
So what I did a year ago, oh, this is so crazy. I dyed my hair blue and like purple, like mermaid. It was really pretty.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, fine. It wasn't. After a wash, it looked like shit.
Why'd you dye your hair blue?
Because I wasn't getting attention, and I got a lot of negative attention from the church after that. I got a lot of attention everywhere because of that. In my business that I was in, I wasn't getting any attention, and I was pissed because I'd been with the company for 4 years. I had met these big goals, and there was, like, no acknowledgement. So then I was, like, pissed. Mm-hmm. So then I dyed my hair blue to get... And I got actually some recognition from the company I was with.
Because you weren't getting the attention.
I wasn't getting the attention. Because it had grown, the company had grown so big that, you know, I was just another number.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But if I really wanted the attention, wouldn't I work harder to get more recognition?
Nope. It's easier to throw a tantrum. It's what you've been doing since you were little. You don't know how to work hard to get attention. You only know how to throw tantrums to get attention.
That would be a true statement.
The good news is, I think you realize that this is getting to such a serious state with your marriage that the gig is up.
Yeah.
And you are starting to realize that you are single-handedly destroying your marriage. And it has nothing to do with your weight.
It's true.
And the fact that you are courageous enough and honest enough with yourself to admit that you're angry about your husband's success because he's getting more attention. And when they parade out of that congregation and give him the hugs and tell him that was an amazing sermon and thank you for what you said to my father last week at my mother's funeral and what a community builder he is and how this he is, it just enrages you. It's okay.
It's ugly.
It's okay. It is ugly. If you can have a sense of humanity for yourself, like, oh man, holy shit, I've been doing this shit since first grade and people have let me get away with this? Holy cow, I'm a really good tantrum thrower. Wow.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like if you can kind of have a little, you can laugh at the weight because the weight, that's not the issue. And neither is the sexual abuse. The issue is narcissism. Attention seeking and tantrum throwing. That's why you have no friends. That's why your marriage is failing. That's why you're not happy.
Yeah.
It's okay. It sucks. Dude, I remember when I saw this shit in myself. The worst.
I don't want it anymore. Like, I really don't.
I bet you're exhausted.
Yeah. It's a lot of work to throw tantrums and to push people out of your life and someone will confront me and then I'm like, fuck you, and I'm gone. Like, you're out. Like, delete from my friend list, see you later.
Mm-hmm. It's everywhere.
Yeah. It's everywhere. That sucks.
It's an easy thing to fix, believe it or not.
Okay, well, I'm good. I want to fix this.
Well, first, I'm curious. Do you actually want to lose weight?
I need to lose weight,
physically. No, I said, do you want to? I didn't ask you if you need to.
Do I want? Oh, God. That's a complicated question, I feel like.
Doesn't have to be.
Do I want to lose weight? I don't know. I don't know.
We're not going to talk about your weight. Because I unless it's something that you want to change, you're not going to do shit about it. And it's a waste of our time to discuss your weight. And you see, until you deal with this attention seeking, and because I think that it's true that you're an emotional eater, mm-hmm. but the emotion that triggers you to eat is anger.
That would be a fair assessment.
That every time you stick food in your mouth, it's like somebody who is a smoker. Every time you shovel in the mac and cheese or the ice cream or the cookies or the mashed potatoes or the Sour Patch Kids or whatever it is that you reach for, it's an FU to everybody.
It is. That is exactly true.
And so you have one of the greatest sources of power in your life is overeating. And your weight.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And I think it would rock your identity to the core if you actually lost the weight and if you got control of your eating.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
So, you know, again, I'm going to ask you, do you actually want to lose weight?
I do. I do.
Why?
Because I want to leave behind that person. I want to leave that identity of I'm defined and by my weight and the control, and I'm tired of doing that.
If you want to save your marriage, and if you would like friends, and if you want to be happy, you have got to lose your weight. And you have got to break the habits around eating for power, because it is so tightly intertwined with this narcissism.
I know in my heart that is true. That is here. I've never been able to identify that, but that is very true.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the massive, massive distinction that we've gotten to is that your weight is not the result of pain. It's the result of power.
It's true. It is true. I promised myself before I came in here that I wasn't going to say that's true to anything that I didn't feel was true.
So I want you to walk out of here and actually have a clear direction about what you're going to change and what you actually want. What business? You're a network marketer, right?
Yes, yep.
So what do you sell?
I sell ketones.
What are ketones?
Ketones help your body get into ketosis. So basically, my whole business is about living optimally. Well, why is that funny, Mel?
Why do you think it's funny?
Because I'm a fake. I'm a phony. I've been hypocritical.
Yeah.
Like, buy this shit from me. I don't do it. I don't follow it. I do whatever the fuck I want. I don't even drink it every day because I want to be in control. And I've told myself it's because I'm sabotaging my own weight loss. That's why I'm not drinking it every day. But really, it's nothing to do with that. It has to do with the control.
But business isn't about success for you. It's about narcissism. It's look at me, 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 look at me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you don't care. Because you don't care about selling ketones or using them. You care about the attention that you either get from the parent company or from the marketing or from your upline or the attention that your downline needs. That's what it's about, and it's why you're not as successful as you want it to be.
Yeah.
And so the secret to fixing your marriage, the secret to having friends, the secret to being happy, the secret to being healthy, the secret to growing your network marketing business is to complete the chapter of your life where you were a raging, tantrum-throwing narcissist and turn the page and actually live the next chapter as somebody who is connected, somebody who cheers for other people, and somebody who truly does the work to be happy, to be healthy. That the tantrums are in the past.
Yeah.
What are some things that you really want for yourself? I mean, you love to sing. Is there a way to expand that? Could you be the choir director at the church?
I could.
But you don't want to?
That's correct.
Because you want to be the center of the attention, or because you don't like the people, or why?
Because I'll give an idea, and then people will criticize it.
They're not criticizing it. They're actually having what we call a discussion.
I'm in charge.